What's up, Nets fans? Welcome to another episode of the Brooklyn Buzz podcast presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Mr. Jack Manuel. What's up, Jack?
Happy All-Star weekend, Nets fans.
And we do have a representative. Didn't make the All-Star team, but Spencer Dinwiddie is in the Skills Challenge, so we're praying for him. I know a lot of betting websites had him at the highest odds.
Ooh.
What are the chances you think Dinwiddie runs away with that?
I actually think he's got a decent shot. Like, it's basically just who rolls up on the day most engaged. Spencer Dinwiddie doesn't have any other events to focus on. You know, Joel Embiid's got the big game and the Rising Star Challenge. He's doing everything. So I think guys like them aren't really going to care as much about the Skills Challenge, whereas Spencer Dinwiddie is going in. I reckon he's going in to win it. And hopefully he goes Super Saiyan mode and makes all the passes and beats out all the small guys and then takes down someone like a Joel Embiid or a Al Horford. I reckon it'll be fun. But yeah, prayers up for Spencer Dinwiddie. I reckon he's got a decent shot.
I think he does too. I think he's super competitive. And like you said, he'll be focused on the challenge. And a lot of it comes down to, if I'm not mistaken, whoever hits that three, you know, whoever hits that shot, you know, you hit that first, you got a good chance the other guy misses. But, you know, shout out to Dinwiddie for being involved in the All-Star game. It's nice to see a net in there. Hopefully next year we have an All-Star, but that's for another day. Before we get started, just a reminder, you can listen to The Buzz on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com. Now, we usually talk about the games, but we're on a seven-game losing streak, so that's not fun. We'll talk about positives, interesting topics today. We'll start off with Allen Crabbe, who's had a resurgence. And in the month of February, he's averaging 18 a game, 4.7 rebounds, 44.8% from the field, and over 40% from three on one turnover. So very efficient numbers and a different Crabbe than we've seen all season. What are your thoughts on the way Allen's playing right now?
Aggression, Nick. And he seems comfortable as well. Like, the coaches were saying that, you know, they just didn't know what was sort of wrong with him. We mentioned before the pod, just having a bit of a chat, maybe the absence of Rondé and Karras sort of helped him feel more a part of the squad in that sort of sense, feel that comfort level. I think he's gotten out of his head a little bit. And he seems to just be shooting it and just like not thinking about the consequences. The glue guys, shout out to those guys. They read out my question on this week's pod, so check them out as well. They mentioned the fact that every time you could see Allen Crabbe shooting it and he missed it, it was going through his head, this is $76 million I'm missing here right now. I'm not worth the $19 million. You can sort of tell. I mean, a lot of guys are like that. These are NBA players. And as much as, like, you know, they're not the ones that decide the contracts that they get, you know, the pressure is on them in every sense of the word. You know, whether it be money, whether it be status, or whether it be just style of play. Allen Crabbe just seems to be just going out there and just absolutely just shooting. And whenever he shoot, and I mean, some of these games, the last two especially, you know, it's the Allen Crabbe of old, and one of the best shooters, the three-point shooters in the NBA when he was in Portland. And he's just seemed lights out. During the year, it felt like he was tentative. And before this sort of streak that he's been on, I think he's had like 30 points a couple of games in a row, or if not two out of three games. And just his three-point shooting and his ability to just look confident, feel confident, and he's just seen the bucket go through. It seems like he doesn't, and he misses one, and he doesn't seem to, you know, overdwell on it. He almost had like the old school Rondé mentality, whereas he's almost taken on the Rondé mentality now, where it's just like play by play, shot by shot, goes in, it goes out, so be it, I'll move on to the next one.
Yeah, Jack, you made some great points. The pressure of the contract, and then I read something about Crabbe. You know, he expected himself to play better. You know, it kind of was bothering him that he wasn't playing better in a bigger role. You know, Rondé and Karras going out, it almost forced him to step up. It's like, you know, someone needs to shoot, someone needs to score points, and he was the guy. And like you mentioned, he looks more comfortable in the system with his teammates. And instead of, like, you know, already deciding what he's going to do before he gets the ball in terms of driving or shooting, he's more so reacting to the defense. You know, when they're overplaying, he's driving to the rim. He's done a good job of finding open space and hitting a little bit of those teardrops, one dribble, two dribble, nothing crazy, but kind of like a page out of Joe Harris's playbook. You know, just a quick drive to the rim, just do your job, just get there. You know, you're not going to make every layup, but you have a better chance of making the layup or getting a foul call. So if Crabbe continues to play like this, you know, you don't really mind paying him the money, right?
Not at all. You know, he's playing like a number one, number two guy. He's a perfect complementary piece alongside a D'Lo and a Spencer Dinwiddie. You know, you mentioned those sort of the month in general. He's played his last four games. He's putting up 25.3 points, 5.5 rebounds, and almost a steal a game, and 5.3 three-pointers made at 51% from the floor. That is just absolutely lights out. He's been one of the form players in the Eastern Conference these past sort of four or five games. And it's just great to see. And Nets Daily had a really great article that I had a read of earlier today as well, just to do some research. The fact that after games, Coach Kenny mentioned, and he mentioned to the press, Alan himself, that, you know, the off days, he's not a guy that just takes rest. He's into the gym, even when guys are telling him to get out of the gym. So it's not through lack of work. It's just through, you know, make or miss. We spoke about it earlier in the season on earlier episodes with Caris LeVert. We were confident about the fact that he'd get that shot back. And look and behold, he has. And I think the same thing is obviously Allen Crabbe has a lot more pressure on him being our sort of number one recruit, number one sort of trade guy, the contract, all that sort of thing, the sort of status he has within the Brooklyn Nets organization and what we want out of him and what we know we can get out of him. But it's good to see he continues to put in the work, you know, rain, hail, or shine. And I think, you know, he's finally seeing the rewards, and it's great to see. You know, he's almost become a really great two-way player. We mentioned the steals just there. I think he mentioned earlier in the season his defense when his offense was down. That's something he was priding himself on. It's good to see that their balance is still there.
Yeah. Kenny's pointed out a few times that he's believed, you know, Crabbe's played solid defense, and I think he does. You know, once in a while, he won't be engaged and allow a backdoor cut, but he at least put some good effort in on that side of the floor. So hopefully Crabbe can keep this up. You know, it's been a rough season in general, but if he can kind of carry this momentum into the rest of the year and carry into, you know, the 2018-2019 season, we'll be pretty happy about it. And like you said, I think getting D'Angelo back kind of helps him too. Having more playmakers out there just makes life a little bit easier. We've seen him have a lot more space than he has in the past. So the creators definitely help in that aspect. But moving on from Crabbe, a lot of Nets fans have been complaining about Kenny Atkinson. Personally, I don't really have much issue with him. Is there anything that you've seen coaching-wise over the last month or two that has really bothered you about Kenny?
Yeah, Nick, we're obviously hugely active on Nets Twitter. And I think the number one thing that I sort of took from it was his rotations. I think a lot of people, and this is from Chris DeLavinio, just after the game, just after the loss of the Pacers, you know, he's getting a little too sub-happy, he described it as. So he's making too many rotations, giving everyone too many looks, not riding the hot hand enough. Now, we've seen Coach Kenny has sort of ridden the hot hand defensively. We saw with Rondé earlier in the season against Portland, where he was a super important piece. Same again with D'Angelo Russell against Portland, where he was got the hot hand and he played above 30 minutes and it just worked out. I think there are times where Coach Kenny can be a little bit lacking in that department. You know, we've seen it probably with D'Angelo now. He looks pretty much healthy, but he sort of subs him in and out in weird and inopportune times. That's something that, you know, isn't really frustrating for me. It's a little bit annoying. It might be annoying for D'Angelo, but he's mentioned to the press and everyone in general that, you know, he's just going out there and playing the game. The other night, Spencer did when he was in some foul trouble, so he did see some extra minutes. I think that's one thing that, you know, we need to take into account, that his number one asset as a coach, Coach Kenny, is his player development. You know, he's still in his second season, midway through his second season as a full-time coach, and he's going to learn the rotations and the substitutions, you know, what works, what doesn't work as it goes on. It doesn't help having so many injuries as well. You know, in incorporating a new guy like a Dante Cunningham. But I think there's valid, you know, valid qualms with it. But I think, yeah, the elevation of concern from some Nets fans is a bit ridiculous. But I see there's always room for improvement, especially from a guy like Coach Kenny, who is still feeling his way into his role as a head coach in today's NBA.
Yeah, I think, you know, the point that you made, he's a second-year head coach. Kenny is still developing. He said that he's still learning. And the Nets are on a 7-game losing streak, and no lineup has really stuck out and been like, oh, yeah, you know, the Nets need to keep this out here. Like, no rotation is perfect right now. I think he's still trying to find a rhythm. They're still trying to find a rhythm of what works, who works well. You know, they've lost two solid bigs this year, you know, Trevor Booker and Tyler Zeller. Neither of them are like, you know, all-stars, game changers, but they're solid guys that come and do the job. And I think they've had real trouble kind of replacing the things that they do on the floor. So I think that's bothered Kenny. Obviously, he values spacing. And I think the injuries, like you mentioned, having LeVert and Rondé out of the lineup, we don't know what the performance team is telling him about D'Lo. Is he playing too many minutes? Is he playing too little minutes? You know, along those lines. But I think for this season, I think a lot of people, like Nets fans, they're just like thinking about now. Look in the beginning of the season and think about what the Nets would have been like if they didn't have Kenny developing guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Jared Allen. Where would this season be at? We might not even be at 15 wins.
No, not at all. And you mentioned those young guys, Nick. I'd even chuck in Damari Carroll, who's having a career season.
Yeah, that relationship.
it's that relationship, and it's not just him developing guys that are, you know, young up-and-coming pieces. It's established pieces. Joe Harris, my boy, has been flourishing like no other. And also, we see the praise that he's gotten from other coaches around the league.
Popovich, I mean, Doc Rivers, Mike D'Antoni.
Yep, those are just to name a few. And I mean, obviously, they're going to have nice things to say. But I think because those guys have seen, been around the NBA for such a long time, they know what it takes to sort of, you know, make it and cement yourself as a top head coach in today's NBA. And I think Coach Kenny has all the tools to do so. You know, it's baby steps. He's almost part of this, like Sean Marks as well. We're all part of this sort of culture shift, this rehabilitation of the Brooklyn Nets franchise. And we're all learning this together. And I think, you know, that's a really positive process, that it's a whole sort of new system, whole sort of new people being involved in this. Like, it's a completely new franchise. And I think that's a really positive process, that Coach Kenny is getting the praise already in terms of just being able to get his guys out there to play. You know, you look at, you know, out in Sacramento, earlier in the season with Phoenix, you know, all these teams that are sort of going out there and getting blown out by 40 points, 50 points, 30 points. You know, that rarely happens to us. I mean, we're going to have a chat about that later in the pod. But despite that, our effort is never waning. We've probably mentioned one or two games where we've been a bit disappointed. But I think that has more to do with the players than it has to do with Coach Kenny, because, you know, you see him day in, day out. There aren't many more passionate coaches. You could probably chuck in Tom Thibodeau. But I think Coach Kenny has the most passion for this game and the most dedication out of any NBA coach in the association today, let alone a guy who's only in his second year.
Exactly. And, you know, when Kenny gets some all-stars and when they have a talented team and he doesn't do a good job, that's when you can get mad. But at this point in what he's done with this team, and like you said, you know, they might not always come out and play hard in the first half or the first quarter, but they still come back in that game and try to make some type of run. They don't give up. And I think that says a lot about Kenny. And just looking at him, he looks like he hasn't slept in days. He's trying to he's trying to figure this out. So, like, I'm not upset about it. Like, I don't think people can, like, what is he supposed to do with the pieces that he has? You know, right now, like, Rondé's probably the only good four that we have, and he's out. So he has to pretty much play Quincy Acey, and he has to play Dante Cunningham. He doesn't have a true stretch four on the roster that he would love to have. So I think, you know, it's somewhat of Kenny not having the pieces he needs to run his system completely. And also, we have to remember, these are a lot of young guys. So the inconsistent play comes with being a young player. You know, they're not going to come out and be consistent every game and run and execute everything that they want them to run. So it's going to be, you know, a grain of salt, everything you see with the Nets this season. Next year, when they're healthy and maybe they add another player, Jeremy Lin, also Jeremy Lin not being here, and that's his veteran point guard that runs your show. You know, even Spencer Dinwiddie's still young in this league. D'Lo's young in this league to run the show. They've done a good job when had the opportunity, but still, the consistency isn't the same thing you'd see out of a Jeremy Lin. So I think the fans need to relax a little bit and look at the roster and, you know, look back at what we thought about the roster before the season started. And if you would have thought the Nets would be here with Jeremy missing the whole season, D'Lo missing almost half the season so far, a Rondé being banged up, Karis being banged up, trading Trevor Booker, trading Tyler Zeller. I think a lot of reasons are why the Nets are where they're at. And I don't think Kenny's a big part of that. So, but hey, if you want to come at us and let us know your thoughts on Twitter, to tweet me at OTG_Nick, and you can tweet Jack at
@JManJBT.
At the JManJBT. And let's move on to Dante Cunningham now. He's a new acquisition. So far, what have you seen from Dante? You know, 4 points per game, 4 rebounds, 1.7 assists, 1.3 steals, field goal percentage a little bit over 40, no threes. What are your thoughts on what he's done so far in Brooklyn?
Nice little piece to sort of take away some minutes from Quincy Acey. You mentioned the fact that he hasn't made a three yet, but he is somewhat of a threat back there. You know, I wouldn't say he's lights out. I'd say, you know, he's, you know, an average three-point shooter at best, maybe just below. But when you're comparing to, say, like a Quincy Acey, who made a couple the other night, might I add. So he's still taking them, but there's times where he just looks hesitant, which is, you know, I think we're taking what we've got with Dante Cunningham right now. He's saying that he's positive about where he is. He's playing hard. He's got that nice relationship with Sean Marks as well. So I think he's fitting into this system perfectly. I think he's, you know, still acclimating himself somewhat to sort of how the guys play. You know, he mentioned before his first game against his former team, New Orleans, that he learned the plays a couple of hours ago. and I think for a team that's, you know, heavily based on a sort of pace and space system, a guy like a Dante Cunningham, who is just an energy guy and, you know, coming off the bench And I think it helps because we mentioned before that lack of forward depth. And it allows us to sort of, you know, be a bit more versatile. If we didn't have Dante Cunningham throughout this, you know, this 3 or 4 game run, without Rondae Hollis-Jefferson injured as well, you know, we'd certainly be struggling even more in that sense. You know, you want Quincy Acey playing 35 minutes tonight, that's for sure. So, you know, Dante's he's been a spark off the bench in terms of his energy, in terms of just doing those little things. He's sort of like a more polished Quincy Acey who hasn't nailed a three yet, but I'm hoping he can get his shot, you know, to get a couple extra minutes here and there because, you know, we've seen the minutes that he's played so far. He played almost 29 minutes against Indiana. He was an important piece in that, you know, back and forth run against Indiana. You know, he was important in terms of just stabilizing things. He's just a nice sort of stabilizer. So I think he's going to see his minutes. But when Rondae comes back, it's going to be a nice little balancing act and a good extra piece, good extra depth piece to have on the roster.
Yeah, a nice veteran to have around, knows how to play basketball, like you said. Nothing crazy, but he'll do some of the small things, bring a little toughness. I like the fact he's averaging 4 rebounds. Obviously, they could use that. And he could possibly take minutes away from AC in the future when Rondae's back, so we'll see what happens with that. I don't think he's a long-term piece or anything like that, but if he did stay around, he wouldn't mind him as being, you know, that 14th or 15th man to just have around as a veteran presence because you've heard a lot of good things about him around the NBA, so I don't mind him being on the squad. And to finish out the roster, finish out the season, they could use like a guy like him on the roster.
Yep.
But Jack, you had this topic you mentioned to me, and I think somebody brought it up on Twitter. Do you think it's better to lose close games or better to lose in a blowout? Like, do you like having your heart broken or just being able to turn off the game in the third quarter?
Yeah, it's interesting, Nick. You make a very valid point with both of those. Just to preface this, did a little bit of research going through the game log on Basketball Reference. We've obviously lost 7 straight and 11 of the past 12. In terms of the margins that some of our losses have been this season, we've had 11 games where we've lost by 5 points or less, and we've lost 6 games by 15 points or more. So there's 6 games that you can probably just turn off quite easily. And I mean, if you take it probably into 12 to 14 points as well, there's those games where the Nets come back in the final quarter as well. So there's plenty of games where the Nets just haven't shown up, so to speak. But there's also been a ridiculous amount of games, you know, 11 games, you get half of those wins. I think a lot of Nets fans would be a lot happier, including us. But I think it's better to lose close games because it's at least showing progress. You're at least showing something on the court. Whereas the blowouts, you can't really take anything away from them. The biggest thing that I've taken away from one blowout this season was that Nick Stauskas' absolutely hot moment in his first game in Toronto. Other than that, there is literally nothing to take from those blowouts. You know, you might get some nice minutes from Jahlil Okafor, who's been quite poor for us. And I mean, the stats been all over Twitter about his on-off numbers. But those close games you see, you know, against Toronto, against Boston, against you know, all those sort of guys, against Cleveland, you know, those close games last night, against the Indiana Pacers, you're seeing something there. Even against New Orleans the other night where we came back from like 26, 28 points down to almost steal it. You know, you're seeing a lot more. You can take away a lot more positives from those games than you can from a blowout game. So if you're writing a pros and cons list, you get out that little notepad, you're obviously going to prefer the close games. It certainly doesn't help, you know, the heart troubles and the blood pressure. But when you got the blowouts on it, I mean, I remember I was chatting to you during the New Orleans game. I'd turned it over to another game when we were like 20 points down. And then I'm getting like bleacher notifications, getting messages on Twitter and stuff. I'm like, okay, maybe I should turn it back now. We're only down by like 10. And so there's moments where it's just like, it pays to just watch all of the Nets game because who knows what could happen. But I'm going to lean towards the close games because at least, you know, you can take something away from it.
And for me, it's close games and it's not even close, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because, you know, like you said, the experience, it matters a lot. When you look at a team like the Timberwolves, for example, obviously they added Jimmy Butler, but their previous season, they lost a lot of close games. This season, they're winning a lot of those close games. And now they're looking at being, you know, possible home court team in the Western Conference playoffs. So I think those close games do matter and you're going to get more experience in the clutch time. When you play those blowout games, the other team is not trying as hard. No matter what you think, they're not putting in 100% effort. If you're up 28 points on somebody, you're not really worried until they get that down to 18. You know what I mean? Like, and like we've seen Okafor, we've seen Stauskas have really nice moments in these blowouts. But when we've seen them in clutch games, close games, their numbers have been terrible. I got a stat from you from NBAMinor.com. It says the Nets have 10 close game wins and 10 close game losses. So it's maybe not as necessarily bad as we think. It's a lot of games to be involved in close games, but that has something to do with our comebacks. And also, I think if you're, you know, we talk about this, and it's obvious because a two-minute report says it, you know, we've had probably three or four losses taken away from us by the referees. So yep. a couple of these close games, we've actually probably should have won. And, you know, like Spencer Dinwiddie mentioned earlier in the season, one or two games at certain points in the season can change the direction of the team. So next year, you know, when we start to get a little bit more respect from the refs, our guys are a little bit more established. Even looking at Dinwiddie right now, from earlier in the season till now, I believe he's getting more foul calls because the NBA is starting to, you know, respect him a little bit and seeing what he does on a consistent basis. D'Lo's great with the pump fakes. He's going to start helping us get more foul calls. Rondé's another guy who's building up his respect. Karis, I think, was starting to get a little bit more respect too coming to the season. So if, you know, they keep building and working forward, and you know, you're going to be more respected as a team. You're not going to be that bad team if you constantly do the good things that winning teams do. I think it'll pay off for the Nets, and I love the experience. I hate the blood pressure. I hate the fast beating heart when you're watching these close games. But hey, it's going to help them in the long run.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think, you know, we mentioned, you know, the guys that are sort of, once you start to turn those wins into losses, I think last year, Minnesota were one of those teams that sort of were really, really bad when it came in the clutch. Now, the Nets certainly aren't terrible. You mentioned, you know, the wins and the losses there. There are times where we do end up grinding it out. It always happens to be against the lesser teams, which is something that a good team does. But I think once we start doing it on a more consistent basis, we turn those 10 wins, as you mentioned before, those 11 sort of those close wins, close losses into blowout wins and become a bit more consistent as a squad, because I think there are nights where we're very much up and down. I think a four-quarter performance has been few and far between across the year.
I feel like it's every night.
Pretty much. You know, we play two amazing quarters of basketball, which almost make up for the two really lackluster, insipid performances we played in the quarters before. If we play four quarters of defense and, you know, make a few shots here and there, especially from the perimeter, that's when we look our best. But, you know, it's all a learning process. It's all about the progress. It's all about the development. And I think baby steps, we'll get there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think two major reasons are why the Nets can't close out close games. Closer, they don't have a true closer yet. You know, is D'Angelo going to be that guy? Is Spencer going to be that guy? Obviously, Spencer's kind of gone into that role a little bit, but his numbers aren't great in that role. So I think, you know, somebody needs to step up and get better shots. Maybe it's just having more talented guys. And defensively, just need more guys that can, you know, lock down their dude one-on-one. You know, too many times you see opposing teams get easy buckets late in the clutch, and that just can't happen. So you just can't have those defensive miscues late in the game. But before we get out of here, let's talk post-All-Star break. Obviously, you know, All-Star week, and we mentioned Dinwiddie at the Skills Challenge. We're hoping he can pull off the W. But moving into the rest of the season, I believe we have 23 games left. Let's talk changes. What would you like to see change in the starting lineup, if anything?
I think D'Lo's got to start, Nick. We mentioned on the previous pod, I thought I'd see him starting by now. Now, it's tough to take out a guy like an Allen Crabbe. I think with the form that he's shown, he's an automatic starter. But, you know, you look at a Quincy Acey, can we start showing some small ball lineups? When Rondé comes back, he's obviously probably going to come off the bench, unless that rest after the All-Star break certainly helps him. I think D'Lo's the most likely starter. You know, let Caris LeVert have his time with the bench unit, and then, you know, stagger the minutes of him and Dinwiddie. Because then you've always got one elite ball handler out there, one guy who can sort of run the show. I think that's the most likely thing to happen. And I think Jared Allen consistently as a starter is something that we're going to see a lot more of. Yes, he's going to have his up and down nights, you know, against the Pacers. He got a bit bodied by Al Jefferson, which was, you know, it was fun to watch from probably Corey's side of things. But for us Nets fans, he was still doing the right things, Jared, in terms of his positioning. But, you know,
he bit on too many pump fakes, especially for a guy like Al Jefferson, who he could block it. Like, Jared Allen needs to know Al Jefferson can't get more than like 6 inches off the ground. You exactly. know, so it's just like a little experience thing.
It is. It's experience, and those reps will come, and he knows. I think in the scouting reports, he was probably focusing on probably a little bit more on Miles Turner and Sabonis. He didn't expect Al Jefferson to be seeing those minutes. But, you know, Allen and D'Lo are my sort of stars I'd like to be seeing. And, I mean, we've got a stretch ahead after the All-Star break where I'm hoping we can get, you know, 6 or 7 wins. We've got the Hornets right after the break, the Bulls, Cleveland, Kings, Clippers, Warriors, Hornets, Sixers, Raptors, Sixers, Mavs, Grizzlies, and Hornets again. We can easily get 5 or 6 wins there. I'm hoping, you know, we start to reverse our losing trend. There's some tough ones in there. We're not going to get earned, but I think after the All-Star break, you might see some teams sort of pack up shop, get into the lottery ball tankathon, so to speak. Whereas us and Nets, we've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. So hopefully we see D'Lo starting, Jared Allen consistently starting as well for the most part. And, you know, hopefully we get the W's from it.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'd like to see D'Angelo in the starting lineup. I'm not really sure how he's going to do it. You mentioned Rondé coming off the bench, and I think that could be a benefit to make it easier to kind of ease the starting lineup in. Maybe something like Spencer, D'Angelo, Allen Crabbe, Damari Carroll, and Jared Allen.
That's what
it's
I like.
A super small lineup, but I think that's something they could roll with. Then you could bring Rondé in pretty soon, and then you could have Carroll play a little bit with the second unit as well. I think just getting back the guys healthy, it's just going to be huge in terms of depth, because there's going to just be so many different options. You're going to have a lot better players on the floor. And like you said, you know, stagger the minutes with D'Lo and Dinwiddie. So LeVert always has kind of a partner on the floor.
Yeah. So. And you mentioned Damari at the four, Nick. I know he's not a huge fan of it in terms of his age and going, you know, banging down low, but you know, the new four role isn't essentially that. And if that's the case, you know, you could have some nights, once Rondé is healthy, have Rondé starting at the four and have Damari coming off the bench. Yeah. I don't mind seeing Damari coming off the bench. I think he's a really nice level head. He's, you know, we're seeing a bit more maturity from Allen Crabbe now, despite the fact he's only 25 years old. But there could be nights where we mix and match. I don't mind, you know, we don't need to have the same starting lineup every night. As long as by the time we're fully healthy, we don't see Quincy Acey starting anymore, then I'm going to be really happy.
Yeah, I just, like you said, I just want to see D'Angelo starting, because I think it's important to him mentally. And I think obviously he's our key cog and, you know, the brightest piece of our future, who has the highest ceiling probably and what he can do. So I'd like to see him kind of hit his stride a little bit more. And he's picked it up. And over the last two games combined, he's had 34 points, 14 assists, 5 rebounds, 14 and 31 from the field. The only concern I'm really having with D'Angelo, and it's been a concern this season, is his three-point shot. You know, I would like to see that kind of find some consistency. Obviously, some of it's due to injury. I wouldn't be surprised if they messed around with his mechanics a touch in the summertime.
Yeah, it does look a little bit herky-jerky, so to speak. You mentioned his three-point shooting there. For me, I like to see him getting into the line a little bit more. We know he's got the jumper, and we know he's, you know, he had this absolutely gorgeous rainbow jumper over a big. But with a lot of our guys, you know, we saw Spencer Dinwiddie. I tweeted out the fact that he was settling for three-pointers, and the most of his points that he got from it the other night are from the line. When we see us getting to the line and making free throws, that's when we're one of the better teams at it. And, you know, I think Rondé probably sets the standard there, so to speak. But when you see Spencer doing it, then, you know, you see the other guys want to do it as well, you know, back up their guys, so to speak. I think Spencer's got to learn some, not Spencer, D'Lo's got to learn some moves around the rim a little bit more and, you know, develop a bit of a chemistry with maybe some of the bigs like a Jared Allen, which Caris LeVert has. I think he's just got to get a little bit craftier, a little bit more polished. You know, we know he's got the talent, but I think a nice full summer and a nice, you know, healthy summer, hopefully, you know, another training camp, you know, these guys are still absolute, you know, infants when it comes to their NBA experience. But I think, you know, hopefully we see just the progress from him, because we know he can get those buckets and, you know, he's learning to be a bit more engaged on the defensive end as well. So I think Coach Kenny's the perfect coach to get it out of him. And, you know, you've mentioned those numbers. Those are great numbers. You know, he's going to have all the expectation, but he's also going to have all the opportunity. So I'm expecting big things from my boy D'Lo.
Yeah, and I think some of it's the willingness to take contact. You know, you just got to be a little bit more aggressive. And remember, he's 21. He's going up against guys that are bigger, stronger than him. I think, you know, some work in the summertime, getting a little bit more strength, a little bit more weight on will help him. And he probably has some of the best fake game I've ever seen out of a 21-year-old. In terms of getting guys to bite on fakes when he's not even really thinking about taking the shot and they're not even in position, and they still bite on his hesitations, his pump fakes all over the place. And I think that's something that really benefits you when you go to the rim. You know, you just get people's hands in all types of weird positions, and then you get yourself to the free throw line, especially when your shot's not falling. That's a great asset to have, and I'd like to see D'Lo do it a little bit more like you mentioned. Definitely. In terms of the rotation, Jack, what do you think should change other than the starting lineup? Anybody else you want to see get more minutes, less minutes? What are your thoughts on that?
No, we've spoken occasionally about some of our G League guys like Milton Doyle and James Webnick. I want to see a little bit more out of them, whether they're going to be anything. I think Jahlil Okafor is a really interesting piece going forward. I mentioned Nick Stauskas in passing. I don't think he's got a huge future, so to speak, with the Nets. Maybe if we offer him on the minimum or something like that, I think, you know, we could certainly get him on the cheap, be just sort of a rotation piece behind like a Joe Harris. But Jahlil Okafor is one guy that, you know, we don't really know where he's going to play. Where's his place in this net system? We know Jared Allen is the focal point going forward, but can Jahlil Okafor develop his game to be where he's not a liability when he's on the floor? Because the statistics showing right now are that he is. Does he have a future in the NBA? Is it with the Nets? There's a lot of questions surrounding him, and you know the answers are certainly up in the air.
Exactly, and it's like, I think Okafor needs to realize his mindset. He had that piece saying he wants to be a franchise cornerstone. Yeah, maybe you still have the talent to do that, but at this point in your career, no team's going to really give you that opportunity until you prove you can do the small things. For me, when Okafor is on the floor, he just needs to show more energy, just be super aggressive, just like all over the place, be like a spark plug. That's the easiest way for yourself to get minutes as a big. You know, play good defense, work on the boards, get us some offensive rebounds, run in transition. I still think there's another level conditioning-wise that he can hit. Obviously, he lost a lot of weight coming to the Nets, but he still doesn't look like he's super fit. And defensively, sometimes he's in okay position and he'll get a block here and there, but he drops so far back. Like, and even if he doesn't, if that player doesn't take the shot, they're already deep in the paint and where so another Nets coming over to help, giving up another open shot. So those advanced stats don't really surprise me because in my eyes, he's still a defensive liability. I know people have been like, you know, he's played pretty good defense, but me watching him on the floor, he's just so slow and his body positioning isn't great. So if he wants to, you know, have a bigger role with the Nets, bigger role this season, I think energy-wise, he needs to pick it up, and defensively, he needs to pick it up. Offensively, we know what you can do. You have some nice post moves. You have some nice, you know, rolls to the rim, but show us some energy, show us some effort, show us some aggression that we've never seen before.
Yeah, it's all going to be whether he can show us it on that end, Nick. And I think, you know, obviously the lack of consistency he's had in terms of the organization supporting him out in Philly, you know, do the Nets bring him back, give him an off-season and see what he can bring? And then maybe, you know, move him at the deadline next February. That could be certainly a possibility. But I think, you know, it's going to be what he shows within these last sort of 25, 30 games. If he can, you know, be somewhat active defensively and not like an absolute horror there, then, you know, he needs to realize, you know, that he's got to be somewhat engaged on both ends. He can't be, you know, an Enes Kanter light because that's not going to cut it in today's NBA. But
and at least Enes Kanter is dominating the boards.
Exactly.
Kanter's one of the best rebounders in the league. Like, that's what I want to see from Okafor. He has the size to be a dominant rebounder. Yeah. Rebounding's a lot of energy and effort. Look at Reggie Evans back in the day in the Nets. Like, he wasn't a super talented player, but that dude just left it all on the court every night. So if Okafor could do something like that, it would help a lot.
You can't just be a bucket getter in today's NBA. You have to have more than one discernible skill, you know, and that skill can't just be, you know, getting points. You know, if he can rebound at an elite level and then maybe even improve his passing game. We've seen moments where Jared Allen, I think he had 6 assists, and I think it was the first time in 30 years that a rookie big has done so. I think that's where the game, the modern center is going. We saw Nikola Jokic last night get a triple-double in freaking 14 minutes. absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely huge shout-out. And make sure you listen to this week's JBT for more info on that. But yeah, I think that's where Jalen needs to figure out where is his... We know he's, you know, decent in the pick and roll. We know he's a nice sort of, you know, finisher, but you can't just be that in today's NBA, especially when you're playing the five, because it's the most integral role on the court along with the point guard position. They sort of anchor the defense and the offense in some cases as well for some teams. So I think there's a lot of possibilities for Jahlil going forward. Hopefully, you know, he can silence some of the haters out there.
Yeah, and maybe I'm a hater right now, but I just think that he could provide us with another level of effort and energy that we need to see if he wants to see the minutes, especially with Kenny's favoritism towards spacing. You know, yeah. If you want to prove to Kenny that you want to be out there, you better be doing some good things in terms of defense, rolling to the rim, energy and effort. But in terms of changes in scheme or certain things the Nets do, would you like to see anything changed over the All-Star break?
There's times, Nick, where we play at such a rapid pace that I think that would be worth slowing it down. I think D'Angelo Russell's minutes being increased might change that. In terms of just our overall system, I think it's not so much that we need to change it. It's just the execution. I think we're lacking the executing of, you know, getting back on transition defense, you know, limiting those turnovers, you know, making shots from the perimeter, not taking so many contested shots, not forcing it, so to speak. I think that not necessarily comes down to the coaches, but it comes down to the players and, you know, we mentioned how important the film room has been to a lot of our guys. I think consistently just seeing where the mistakes are happening, where they need to be a little bit better in terms of execution wise. And I think, you know, we'll get there. We mentioned baby steps, you know, one step at a time. Sometimes it might feel like two steps forward, one step back. But, you know, it's all a part of the overall plan of seeing where we are in the future. I think next year, you know, if we see the same sort of lapses, then it's going to be worrying. But this is almost like a completely new team. So the fact that we're going to see mistakes is obvious. But, you know, that as long as they're being corrected and being addressed is the important part.
Yeah, like you said, it's a young squad and like the kids are still learning into terms of what they want in the system. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some defensive changes in terms of scheme. I feel like the Nets' big are just dropping back so far on pick and rolls, and it's putting a lot of pressure on the guard to get over the top. If they even get caught on the screen the tiniest bit, it's just putting them out of position and creating a problem for the defense. So I wouldn't be surprised if they address that. I'm not telling them what scheme to run because I'm not sure which one will work. They have more tape and watch more film than I do, but I think that's not working correctly. And also I think the players sometimes are, you know, I know the whole point of the defense is to force long twos, but sometimes these mid-range jump shots are wide open and it's the guys that can hit these jump shots. Now, we want them to shoot the long twos, but you don't want to give them wide open looks. You know, they're still NBA players. So I think there's just some little details they need to fix up defensively. Offensively, I'm not as worried. I think things will kind of come, especially when we get back a playmaker like LeVert and then a great scorer like Rondé in the post. It's funny even saying that term, but I think that'll really help. But goals of the All-Star break, you know, post All-Star break, you know, what do you want to see the most in terms of wins, and who do you want to see step up the most in terms of one player?
We've harped on the 30 win mark, Nick. You know, I'd probably settle for 28, 29 right now, but 30 is just that nice round number. We mentioned, you know, the schedule going forward has plenty of opportunities to get the W's. You know, I just want to see, you know, some consistent minutes from D'Angelo, some consistent minutes from Spencer, you know, some consistent minutes from Jared Allen. Just guys that we, you know, the same sort of thing basically going forward. You know, Rondé continuing to sort of, you know, not force himself, but, you know, take the three-point shot when it's in the flow of the system. Seeing the same sort of, you know, leadership from Damari Carroll. It's almost more of the same thing, but, you know, tweaking the sort of negatives, like you mentioned, on the defensive end. You know, we have lapses. Alan Crabb, I just want to see him continue to maintain that aggression, maintain that sort of, that frame of mind that he has, where it's just, it's almost like you're going out there with a blank slate. Every play is a blank slate. You miss it, so be it. You know, you get something on the defensive end and you go back and you nail that three. I think it's just all these positive sort of developments that we want to see from our guys. There's going to be, you know, lapses and mistakes, as I mentioned before, but, you know, the mistakes are what help you grow. And especially with this young team, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie not settling for those three-point shots because, you know, it's hurting his efficiency. You know, not settling. I think continuing to just maintain those buzzwords like aggression and execution is going to be the key for us going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think the aggression, the physicality, you know, sometimes the Nets have been soft this season. I like them to play hard, physical, execute the game plan the rest of the season. 30 games should be the goal. You know, even though it's tough and they've lost a lot of games, they should be getting back two of their best players in LeVert and Rondé, offensively and defensively. Probably can make an argument they're probably, if not the best two-way players on the Nets, you know, top three, top four on the Nets in terms of that. So I think getting them back should definitely help. And like I said, goals defensively, you know, like you said, get rid of those lapses, you know, tighten it up, run the show right, consistency from some of the young guys. And in terms of one player, I'd like to see D'Angelo find his rhythm by the end of the season. I'd like him to get back to those numbers we saw early in the year, you know, 20 a game, 5 or 6 assists, over 45% from the field. And I would be really happy if he could get his three-point shooting over 30%. I don't think it has to be lights out or anything, but I'd like that to get a little bit higher. So going to the post-All-Star break, I think there's some positives. And last year, the Nets were really nice after the post-All-Star break. So I think the same thing could be said this year.
Hopefully we get it going, Nick, because that break's always – all the players that mentioned, I'm listening to road tripping with LeBron most recently. He's a lot of the time, the guys that are going to the All-Star game, as much as they enjoy it and they enjoy being the face of sort of the weekend, they're envious of the guys who get to have that break. And, you know, all the comments from guys, from a lot of our guys, it's just like, you know, this is where we just reset. You know, we take our mind off the game a little bit because, you know, 82 games, it's a long bloody season. You know, there aren't many sports and leagues in the world that play 82 games in the space of, you know, less than 6 months. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the progression from this team. And hopefully we see a lot of the things that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Jack. And just to touch on that real quick, the Nets did seem tired having all these injuries. Guys are playing more minutes in bigger roles they didn't expect. I've already seen, I think, on Instagram, like 3 or 4 Nets on vacation. Allen Crabbe, D'Angelo Russell, Damari Carroll, Jahlil Okafor, already all on vacation. So these guys wanted to get some rest. I think D'Angelo mentioned, like, all this losing, it kind of gives you time to kind of, you know, get yourself back together and figure things out. So that should really help the Nets, and hopefully they can find their rhythm going to the end of the season.
Deaths.
But that wraps it up for today. Jack, as always, a wonderful show with you, and thank you everybody for listening. You can catch The Buzz on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com. Also be dropping a special All-Star edition of the NBA Outlet this weekend, so check that out. Jack will be on there as well.